Welcome to Doula Club, a podcast for doulas by a doula. I'm your host, Bonnie Silva. Enjoy the ride. Hey guys, welcome back. So today's episode, I'm interviewing Dani Katz. Dani is a doula here in New York City, and she and I have a very heart-to-heart conversation about professional transparency, her journey as a doula, and what holds for her in the future. I hope you guys enjoy it.
So tell me, because I love the fact that the way you doula is very unique in my perspective, in my eyes. And I feel that you have a very whimsical but very grounding way to doula. So how did you become a doula?
Thanks. So let's see. If we go way back, I went to college for music. I was a jazz trombonist. And I pursued that in like my late teens, early 20s. And then I kind of switched gears. I got really into living a healthy lifestyle. I was a vegan at the time, and I got really into yoga. I got certified as a yoga teacher, and I was kind of having a life crisis because I was in school for music, but it didn't really align with this new holistic lifestyle that I was getting into. So I ended up switching gears, and I dropped out of music school, and I went to school for nutrition. And I was on a path to being a dietitian, I guess.
Oh, wow.
And I finished my bachelor's in nutrition at Hunter. So I then moved to the city. I was living in Westchester before that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while I was in school, I was teaching yoga just to get me through school. And then by the time I graduated, I was kind of like, screw becoming a dietitian. I'm kind of into teaching yoga. So I just transitioned to doing that full time. Mm-hmm. And I was on this grind where I was teaching 20 yoga classes a week plus privates. And
I remember that.
Then I got into prenatal yoga out of mere necessity. Like, I did not have an interest in it. I knew nothing about pregnancy or birth, but I kept having pregnant women show up to my classes, like my normal classes.
Sure.
And they kind of freaked me out. And then I remember my breaking point was one time I had a woman. It was like a level 2 vinyasa class. I was planning like a twist themed class. And this woman comes and she goes, today's my due date, but my baby didn't come. So like, I'm just going to come take your yoga class. And I'm like, damn, like, is this okay? Like, I was planning twists. So I was just a little freaked out. And I'm like, you know what? I just need to get my damn prenatal certification so that I won't be freaked out in these situations. So, you know, in the yoga world, there's a lot of basic, like 20-hour prenatal yoga trainings, mm-hmm. which basically just cover the modifications, do this, don't do that. And then there's also longer, like 85 or 100 hour prenatal trainings. And I said, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I might as well do a longer one.
Yeah.
So I found this one with this really awesome woman. Her name's Carrie Parker. It was out of Yoga Works, but it wasn't really Yoga Works training. It was her own thing that she calls Baby Moon Prenatal.
Cool.
And it was modular. So it was like one weekend a month for, I don't know, 5 different sessions every other month. So it took like a year to finish it. But I learned so much from her. She is like a doula in disguise. She doesn't call herself a doula, but she attends births. She had a bunch of natural births herself. She does childbirth ed. So I really liked her training a lot. I learned a lot. That was through her training, I realized I could call my mom and be like, hey, what was my birth story?
Exactly.
I never even thought to ask about my birth story. And then I learned my birth story. And I was very particularly interested after doing that training in the injustice. I'm a Sagittarius, and I feel like Sagittarius need justice and are very fair people.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, whoa, this system's broken. Like, this is so unjust. And I was very interested in that, how, you know, women are dying more in this country and all that surrounding birth. I was shocked. I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
So in addition to learning how to teach a good prenatal class and realizing I was good at it, I also learned about, you know, this passion I had for maybe helping this broken system. And I actually was never fully considering doing doula training until one of my friends was like, I'm interested in this. If you sign up and I sign up, we get $50 off.
So like a little partnership.
Yeah. That's I'm like, great. Oh, I was kind of into that anyway. Sure.
So Dani, now that you are an experienced doula, you've attended tons and tons of births. How has that changed you, not only as a doula, as a woman, but also how does the traumas and the views that you've seen in birth has changed your perspective for your future?
So a lot has changed in the 4 years I've been dueling. I think a lot of doulas go through this transition where early on in our doula careers, we're energetic, we're enthusiastic, we're very into natural birth.
Yeah.
And are willing to go above and beyond for our clients, even if that means like a 6-day birth. Sure, I'm there.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first birth that I've even attended was like, I think it was close to a 20-hour birth, which isn't even that long considering so many other births out there. But I did not take one break.
Yeah.
I was there throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, and so breaks and self-care,
yeah, so
that's a huge thing I've picked up along the way.
Totally.
Learning how to take care of myself and preserve myself because, you know, you burn out really quick in this work.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, going back to the natural birth piece, I've really developed an ability to support all people.
Mm-hmm.
And even if people were planning a natural birth and it doesn't quite go that way, you know, not being emotionally invested in that, learning, you know, using the mantra a lot of doulas use, it's not my birth, not my birth, not my birth.
For somehow, like, we personally, and this is something that, like, I think that not a lot of doulas realize, that we attach ourselves, especially in the beginning, I think.
Yeah.
Over time, we learn to disattach ourselves, but, like, in the beginning, we attach ourselves to the birth, so we feel guilty if it doesn't go the way the clients envisioned it to going.
Yeah, as if it's our fault.
Yes.
And if only I did a better hip squeeze, or if only I was a better doula, she would have had her perfect natural birth. And I would say 99% of the time, that's just not true at all. So learning that was huge. And like you said, detaching, because there is a way to love the client, be there for the client, be fully present and supportive without being attached to their birth outcomes.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think we serve them better when we approach it with a more professional, detached sort of mentality versus, you know, trying to be their ultimate companion or their best friend, which I definitely was in the beginning. I really wanted to be liked and respected and all that. But now I feel more free to be myself as a doula. I am pretty middle ground and even keeled, which I've learned about myself. I am a pretty holistic person. I can also be a radical person, you know, in my life.
So you found that middle balance.
Yeah. Through this work, I've realized I'm not all that radical and natural, I mean, compared to other people.
Sure.
Like, I am more in the middle. I think a lot sometimes about, you know, my own births, if I have births eventually in the future. I've never had a birth so far in my life, but
like your own birth.
Yeah. Thinking about my own future birth, and, you know, I love natural birth. I love home birth deeply. I respect it. I think it's beautifully designed. So that is what I would be interested in pursuing, but I'm also realizing I'm kind of a wimp with pain and discomfort. I'm not all that resilient when I look at myself, honestly. And as much as I want to think I am, it's like, I'm just trying to look at myself in a very real way.
Yeah.
And saying, well, you know, what if I did have a really long, complicated birth?
Sure.
Like, maybe I would want those medical options. And that's been kind of huge to, like, be accepting of my true self and not just forcing myself into this category of, like, natural home birth.
Because this is what you thought being a doula, that maybe that you should have a natural birth. But as you're doing this work, do you feel that the experiences from your past clients have kind of shaped you into changing how you think right now?
Totally. Yeah. I've just witnessed so many different types of births, and I've seen many people who, you know, planned and did everything possible for a natural birth, and it didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And they were able to find peace and strength. And that to me is inspiring, almost more so than someone who like fights their way to like have the exact birth experience they want. I've also seen people traumatized after their natural births.
Yeah. I do have to point that out, that I've had clients in the past that, and I know for a fact that they didn't want to admit it to me, that they fought, had the birth that they wanted, and was traumatized by that birth plan. And that's something that, you know, it's very personal, but it's also very heartbreaking, because it's like you got exactly what you envisioned, but even then that didn't really bring the happiness that you thought you were going to get. So that's really, really, it's a huge cloud.
Yeah. So like learning this ability to be flexible, I've learned to do it as a doula. And only through that, I'm now learning to do it within myself. And, you know, will I probably do everything in my power to have a natural birth? Yes, because I've seen, you know, the negative effects from pharmaceuticals and, you know, hospital vibes. Of course, I'm not going to try to have an experience like that. But I feel like I've finally become more accepting. Like, okay, like if I'm in a situation where I need that, like I can accept that. So one of the biggest challenges that I work with being a doula in a really huge overpopulated city like New York is arbitrary hospital policies. Some just, you know, that they're strict about that literally just serve no purpose or make no sense and don't help or hurt. So it's just neutral but annoying. And then some that actually do hurt. I can think of a few, like mandatory IV fluids.
Yep. That's one of them. And it's like a challenge to get a hemp block.
Yeah.
Like to get a hemp block, it's like asking like for a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Like it's like
very often,
it's very often a huge problem.
Intermittent monitoring, limiting of cervical exams, ability to freely move.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some hospitals are kind of shit, honestly.
Well, they smell bad. They look bad. But then on top of that, they don't have, not a lot of them have the tools that we need, that they, that the clients need, like a birthing ball, peanut ball. Not everybody can afford it, even though they're not very expensive. Not everybody can afford it or want that in their fucking house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And, you know, the biggest one that really irks me in these days is just like, I kind of shut down. It's during directed pushing on the back with the legs back, the cheerleading vibes, counting to 10. I just like, I shudder every single time. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell my clients in prenatals, like, okay, this is what normal hospital culture is. You don't have to do it. It's really hard for a client in transition, whether she has an epidural or not, to assert herself and say, I'm not going to push this way.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And then I feel too pushy to be the one to say, like, you know, we're not pushing this way. Or sometimes I'll run it by the client, like, hey, do you want to push this way? And she'll often be like, sure, whatever. Like, I'll just go with it. And it's like almost everyone gets a second degree tear. And I'm like, why does everyone get a second degree tear? It's because we're pushing on the back with the legs up and the doctor's hand is inside the vagina, stretching it. And I don't feel like that is the optimal way to push a baby out.
It's really frustrating because, you know, we're on such a fine line between medical staff and like citizens, you know, like we really like we cross such a fine line. You know, we know sometimes just as much as the nurses, and I'm totally not saying that nurses are like unqualified, like they're amazing. And like, I definitely love them, but like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that like, you know, when we see the doctors like trying to stretch out the vagina, like I really wish it wouldn't be like that.
I really wish it wouldn't be like that. And you do get the occasional woke doctor, but even I've never had the experience of a home birth in the hospital. I've never had as, like, I've seen very hands-off home births, and I've just, even with the best doctors, have never seen that. And I kind of want to share a story that happened the last birth I was at. I'm definitely not going to say names or anything like that, but this is one of my favorite doctors. I go to births with them a ton, and consistently good experiences, like way better than most other OB practices in the city. And, you know, we had this experience where my client was having an unmedicated birth, but induced with Pitocin just for being post-date, which my client consented to and was cool with, so all good. She started pushing. It's a second-time mom, so it wasn't too much pushing before a baby came. And out of nowhere, the doctor puts their hand in my client's vagina. And my client goes, you know, in the throes of transition, pushing, "Stop! What are you doing? What are you doing? That really hurts. Stop."
Yeah.
And instead of taking their hand out, they finished what they were doing. They weren't doing anything, just their hand was in there. They waited till the contraction was over. And then after it, they just said, "Sorry, I just had to do that." With no explanation, nothing more. And I'm like, this is one of my favorite doctors who gives consistent good experiences. And this, come on.
Yeah. It's really frustrating also when, you know, you're in the room, you know that the doctor shouldn't be rupturing the membranes because they're not telling the client that they're rupturing the membranes. You're seeing them do it and the client's totally okay with it because they're not being, but there's no professional transparency happening. So yeah. You become like a narrator, like, "Oh, are you breaking their membranes?"
And it's such an awkward position to be in because, you know, as doulas, I feel like our job should be to give emotional and physical support, not to be the fucking police.
Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, providers should be transparent. And in this situation, she wasn't even breaking her waters. I literally have no idea what she was doing. Just needed to feel something. Probably maybe for her own knowledge or I don't know what.
Yeah.
But it really irked me and it triggered me.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. And, you know, so having to see situations like this, it's tough.
So I definitely wanted to talk about professional transparency. And here's an example of professional transparency, and I'll give it to you. When I go to the doctor, let's just be honest, like I don't have health insurance. So I'm going to go to NYU Dentistry, where it's a dentistry, it's a school, right? The last few times that I went there, I was with a doctor that she was great. It was a woman. She was great. But there was no professional clarification and transparency. So she would do things in my mouth, poke and prodle. And I would, of course, am very nervous about things going in my mouth, no pun intended, but you know, there was no professional clarification of what she was doing. So it always made me feel very frustrated and always made me feel like she wasn't honoring me as a client, you know, as a patient. Well, this last time that I went there, which was a few days ago, I got a different doctor and he was professional. He was like, "This is what I'm doing right now. This is what we're doing right now. This is what we're going to do. And this is what I want. And this is da da da. Open your mouth like this, turn your head like this." There was professional transparency. And I even turned to him and said, and it was a guy this time. And he said, and I said to him, "Thank you for your professional transparency." And I think that even stuck with him because he even like kind of gave me like a surprised look. He's like, "Yeah, of course." You know, and that's the difference when I'm talking about professional transparency with my clients in terms of birth, is that there's a difference between a doctor coming in and telling you to do this and then sticking his fingers in your vagina to do whatever, to check whatever. And then there's a difference between like, "Hey, we're here to do this. We would like to do this. Is it okay to do this?"
Totally. And some people are cool with hands in their vagina. I've seen that be helpful even, you know, during pushing or you know, it sometimes it can be helpful to get a cervical exam.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not anti any of those things.
Sure.
But I do feel strongly that if anyone's putting a hand in anyone's vagina, permission should be asked first. And it's so simple and so basic, and you would think that that's a given, but it's not.
Yeah.
And that kind of blows me away with hospital births, in especially in rushed New York City culture,
yeah.
where especially in some of these big practices, I see some of these doctors, you know, they're on call, they have like four other patients, and they're just kind of going through the motions or
yeah.
rushing you through. And it can be tough to witness,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, even if our clients aren't necessarily bothered by it, because it's kind of their only experience, like when you start to see it time after time, you start to be like, fuck this shit after a while. Like, this doesn't lead to better outcomes.
Yeah. It's crazy how, you know, you would think that with the amount of time that the like OBGYNs have been around, that you would think that over time there have been an evolution of how they communicate, how their bedside manners are.
Right.
But it's very rare when you see a doctor really truly sit down and talk to their clients, you know.
Yeah.
It's very rare, because you just, it's like you said, that there's that New York rush moment where you have to give birth, you go into the hospitals, there's like a ticking time bomb where you have to do it until a certain time, or they're like going to start to talk about C-sections, and if you don't push for an X amount of time, they'll start talking about C-sections. It's very crazy, and I just don't understand how we haven't evolved since the beginning of times. It's just a kind of like stayed stagnant for like a hot minute, and I just don't understand why.
Well, what you have to realize is obstetrics is pretty new compared to midwifery. So midwifery has literally been around since the beginning of time. It's the probably oldest job that exists.
Mm.
Whereas obstetrics is about, what is it, 100 years old?
Yeah.
If that.
I mean, the tools are still the same.
Right. Yeah. But it's just, you know, obstetrics came in, not that it has bad intentions. I think the intention was, oh, women die in childbirth, we want to prevent that from happening. But
yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Also a disempowerment of women's work, because midwifery is women's work. And, you know, it was also a patriarchal thing where, you know, the midwives were made to be, you know, like these uneducated grannies.
Yes,
and racism is tied in there as well.
100%.
And the idea was to get all women out of their homes and into the hospital. And back then, only men.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there are women doctors, of course, but it's still rooted in a patriarchal system.
Absolutely.
And especially when we're, you know, seeing what happened. Georgia this week just passed some like awful abortion. Yeah. Like, this is all the same shit. Like, this is all rooted in the same patriarchal ways that men control a woman's body.
Yes.
And so even if you have, like, the sweetest woman OB, like, her training, you know, is probably still rooted in a lot of patriarchal systems. And we have to be cognizant of that. And I really do feel like, you know, my role as a doula is not to save people from the system, because people are not infants, you know,
yeah.
They have infants, but they are adults. So they have the ability to do their own research. And if they decide to birth in this system, I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people hire me specifically because I'm able to bring a little bit of that natural and whimsical and fun energy into what would maybe without me or without a doula be like a more rigid or unpleasant experience. So it's like, okay, we're birthing in this system, but how can we make the best of it and maximize the magic? And that's kind of my mentality with doula work. It's like, how can I bring magic to this like pretty normal birth? So after a few years of doing this work and hustling and grinding in New York, you know, some months taking up to 5 births a month, and then lately doing less births, but just tons and tons of postpartum, you know, maybe 30 hours a week or more of postpartum.
Sure.
I've reached a point where I'm questioning who I am, because as doulas, we aren't able to hold a strong identity in the context of supporting our client. We have to be kind of neutral. The role calls for us to be neutral. And so in these years of giving so much selfless service, I've grown a lot. It's made me into an amazing, compassionate, you know, beautiful person who, you know, I'm able to listen and care for others. And I feel really grateful for that opportunity. But it's also raised a lot of questions like, okay, well, who am I? Mm. And what about me? Which can sound a little bit selfish or self-absorbed, but it's not. It's valid. And, you know, you can't fill from an empty cup. And all these years being in New York and serving others, it's really got me to a place where I'm like, okay, well, what's the next thing I can do that's for me?
Yeah.
Like, I could serve clients forever. Like, I could do this forever, but where do I stop? Where do I draw the line? So I've made the decision to wind it down.
Yeah.
I'm doing this work for 2 more months. I'm here for 2 more months, a little bit less. Around July, I'm moving upstate to Ithaca, where, you know, it's gorgeous. It's tons of nature,
yeah.
Tons of plants. I'm very into herbalism and plants. So, you know, I'm going to just be in that energy. It's a much more yin, calm sort of place compared to New York. And, you know, I don't have a plan yet. I still want to work in the realm of childbirth.
Yeah.
I feel like it's my calling. And, you know, I've become somewhat of an expert in childbirth. I know a lot, and I know I have the capacity to help people in this realm. But I've realized that doula work can be super draining, super taxing, emotionally and physically.
Yeah.
Being on call, being so close to the phone all the time. You know, I like worry about EMFs and
yeah.
Wi-Fi and all that bullshit, but it's real. And I could really use a break, and I plan to really focus on myself in this break. I'm taking a few months just to be and just to discover and explore, you know, who I am when I'm not in that place of giving everything I've got, you know, for 24 hours straight. You know, I'm going to put my phone away and just be. And then I am apprenticing at a birth center in India, in Hyderabad, India, called Healthy Mother, Healthy Baby.
Mm.
There's a wonderful midwife named Vijaya who runs the birth center. And it's a very cool place because it is a birth center. It's certainly not a hospital, but there is an OR built in to the building and doctors on call. So if you do need to transfer for either an epidural or a C-section or augmentation, it's
yeah.
all in the same building, which is sounds like a hospital, but it's not. So
yeah,
it's a
yeah,
very
yeah.
unique and cool situation.
That's really cool.
In a totally different culture.
Yeah.
So, you know, I trained on the farm in Tennessee last summer to be a midwife assistant.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, and I haven't gotten an opportunity to really use those skills yet,
yeah.
But I loved it. And so I'm going to finally get to use those skills in an apprenticeship sort of way. And, you know, once I return from that, I'm going to kind of evaluate what my next step is, you know, possibly becoming a midwife or pursuing becoming a lactation consultant or maybe a childbirth educator. So, and I'm not ruling out future doula work.
Yeah.
I'm just really looking forward to taking a pause and finding my own self-worth and valuing myself. And I think a lot of doulas can forget that. We just become so self-sacrificing.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because I remember when I became a doula, I was very much like we were talking about, like, I wanted everything. I wanted like to know everything. I wanted to be at all of the births, no matter how long they were. And I definitely wanted to be a midwife at some point. Like I had all that, all of those visions already set on the first year. And one thing that I noticed over time is that I don't necessarily know if midwifery is for me. Personally. And, you know, I've kind of definitely migrated more towards postpartum than birth.
Yeah.
And I think that that comes with like the maturity of our work. It really kind of it's very transformational and it's very individual, right. You know, how, you know, you thought in the beginning was something and then you kind of like evolved into something else in the same umbrella of birth work, of course, as did I. So I think it's a very individualized of how each person as the doula work kind of like transforms us into something that is like completely gorgeous, but in a different way than when we started.
Totally. And realizing that, you know, you don't have to do it all and it's okay to, you know, have backup and let other doulas do some of the work too, and to refer out, and that you don't have to have every experience. Because, you know, you start to realize after a while, like, you go to the births you're meant to go to.
Yeah.
And you serve the clients you're meant to serve. And speaking on your point of, you know, getting more into postpartum, I think we start to realize that birth is typically 1 or 2 days and postpartum is like kind of forever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 6 weeks, but then it's also a lifetime, you know?
Absolutely.
And we have no system set up in this country at all for supporting women postpartum.
How many times do you hear your clients are like, oh, I've been a year postpartum?
Yeah.
Like, that's not uncommon whatsoever.
Yeah. And women are... they expect from either the media or I don't know what, social media, to just bounce right back and to like have their old life back and their old body. And people are really confused when things don't go back to quote unquote normal.
They don't bounce right back. They're like, why am I having such a hard time? And then the comparison, it's just, it's a whole new sticky world that.
Yeah. We play a huge role though in normalizing it and supporting.
Yeah.
Because it's very simple postpartum work. It's like these women need to be held. They need to be heard.
Yep.
They need to be fed. They need a break.
Yeah.
And no one really, except for us, provides that.
I hope you guys all enjoyed this very raw interview with Dani. Thank you to Dani for being so open and honest about her work, her views on doula work and under the umbrella of birth work. And next week's episode is going to be super great, super awesome. Adrian Stair is here, guys. Adrian is a baby wearing queen, postpartum doula extraordinaire, and just a fucking badass chick. And I can't wait for you guys to listen to this fantastic interview that we did together. Bye.